In a world where gaming is everything, welcome to the Extreme Gaming Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the Extreme Gaming Podcast. This is episode 264, January 23rd. But we've got a time machine that we bent back in time and recorded it on January 21st because things are happening on Thursday and we're busy. But we always want to bring you a show. And we're a couple of men down, but, you know, we plug on regardless. I'm Trev, as always. Boring Trev. Yeah. I changed my name so many times, I went back to just Trev. Joining me today is my sidekick, a.k.a. Mr. Gray.
Yes, the sidekick, co-host, friend, old guy, whatever you want to call me. Gray Gamer 25 here, ready for another episode with lots of stuff to go over.
Oh, yeah. I think it feels like we were recording just a few days ago, and now there's...
Technically, we were.
Well, yeah, true. But it literally feels like it because... I mean, we had so much content,
yeah,
which is not a bad thing. More stuff left over from CES. But really quickly, before we get to what was left of the rest, of course, if you haven't already and you want to talk to us about gaming hardware, that kind of stuff, or you just want to come over and take the piss out of Gray or myself, it's fine. Come along to Discord, discord.gg/extremegamingpodcast, or just search for us on the Googles and you can find us there. We love our gaming and we love our hardware equally, our gaming hardware. So if you want to come over and submit any questions regarding games we've played or we could play or you want us to play, or any kind of tech questions regarding PCs, hardware, that kind of thing, just come across and tag either Gray or myself or put it in general chat and we'll add it to the our pod each week that we do. And last but not least, we do have our friend Taro, who comes on from time to time, from gamertech.org. And if he was here, I'd give him more chance to plug his business, but he's not. So, seriously, go to gamertech.org because they're mostly UK based, but they are really, really good for custom build PCs. A lot of useful, helpful advice to get you up and running. And name your social, we're probably on most of them. YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, at Extreme Gaming Podcast, and X, Twitter X, as I've heard some people call it, Gray, Extreme Podcast. Shall we begin? The CES round off, as I think we're calling it, Gray. You left a few links here.
The only reason I left a couple of those is because I thought that was kind of cool that they were talking about some of the gadgets that they saw. And there was a list of three different days where they had different gadgets every day. Mm-hmm. I just thought it might be kind of fun to look into it and see what is kind of coming along. Apparently, one of the gadgets is a pair of smart glasses, which we've heard before. Like Google Lens tried it and then they abandoned it. But apparently, this group is going to actually do it. And this is a company called Holiday. I'm not sure how they pronounce it. But they're coming out with a pair, and I was looking at the pair. You can't see the picture, but we'll put it in our video podcast, which you should check out because there's a lot of video that I put in.
There's no point me bringing it up just now. I was going to do it in a separate tab, and I realized there's no point.
Well, that's true too.
Definitely no point because we're not doing it live. We're pre-recording it.
Yes, but the audio people could be hearing us, and they won't know about the video podcast unless they go and listen to it.
True.
See?
Yep.
So this pair of glasses looks like thicker rimmed black framed glasses. They look very ordinary, and as I'm looking at it, I don't see any, you know, weird things about it that you know, if you put them on, people would think you're like a real nerd. I mean, technically they are nerdy kind of glasses, but they're not terrible looking. But apparently this is going to be they're calling it provocative AI eyewear. I'm not sure what the provocative means. Are they going to run like porn on them or something while you're talking to somebody, like your boss?
Maybe.
I mean, I don't know.
Maybe.
But they're basically kind of classic looking. They present a 3.5-inch monochrome display. So no color, guys. And it means the glasses can act like an all-knowing AI sidekick. Okay. So apparently you can put teleprompter mode on it. You can do voice control on it. I don't know how all that's going to work, but supposedly they're going to be landing in the first few months of this year. So
I've only one question on that. Mm-hmm. What's it got to do with gaming and or gaming hardware?
I don't know. Extreme Gaming Podcast. Cool. I just thought it was kind of neat. There is an OLED TV, so
I just wanted to wind you up because essentially we talk about what we want, we go in tangents. I just thought, what's it got to do with gaming and hardware? But
well, there is some stuff like the OLED TV they're coming out with. Apparently, if you want, if some people like Trev likes to hook stuff up to his OLED.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I don't have an OLED anymore. I'm a peasant. I'm a mini LED guy because I wanted the massive TV, and to go down, to go to 98 inches or 85 inch for an OLED is stupid money. So I had to compromise.
I thought you just got one, though.
It's a mini LED. The 85 inches a mini LED. It's not an OLED.
Oh, okay. Well, it's still pretty good.
But that, it's hard to tell the difference between them. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, I digress.
Well, this is a Samsung, they're calling it the S95D. They call it their TV of the year. Okay. And this is glare-free 2.0 tech, has AI power, of course, AI-powered features, including what they're calling Upscaling Pro.
Mm.
So not sure what that means or whether that's going to be something that's going to enhance your gameplay if you're a couch guy that plays the games. Doesn't really say. They claim they have glare-free 2.0. Glare-free. I'd like to see that because no matter what, you tend to get glare from something sometimes. I know on my set, my OLED, I turn off, like there's a lamp I have on my next to my couch when I'm watching. And if I don't turn that off, you just see a big old light reflection right in the TV.
It is a pane of glass. There's only so much you can do to reflect reflections when, or stop reflections when it is a pane of glass, and by nature that will reflect light.
Oh, and by the way, and you had just mentioned mini LED. It says this mode, this glare-free 2.0 mode,
yeah,
is coming to 8K, 4K, and mini LED TVs in 2025.
Mini LED don't suffer from it as much, but yes, that's also useful to have, yeah. Correct.
I thought that was kind of neat. Let's see what else we got here that's relatively
Crap. I'm looking at this list, mate. So the RoboRock picking up your dirty socks looks phenomenal. Have you seen that thing, number six?
Yeah. It is pretty funny looking. It's kind of like what you see out of the old movies when they used to make jokes about robots doing stuff for you.
That short circuit right there, that's Johnny Five.
Yeah, that's right.
That's Johnny Five's coming to pick up. Hi, I'm Johnny Five.
Or maybe a part of Johnny Five.
Part of Johnny Five, yeah. Gray will put it in. Right, see if you're putting pictures in, Gray.
Oh, yeah, I'll definitely put a picture that one in, like,
of Johnny Five funniest. Or something.
It's great. I mean, I like how they just made it, you know, they just put dirty socks all around it. Like, you know, okay, do it.
Imagine it could pick up a pet or a small child. Like, you get out of the way, you're in the way, bye, and then just continue.
You pick up the family dog or something.
Hoovering up.
People are screaming, going, put that dog down. Wow.
Things it would pick up, well, you can imagine, we can't say too much here, but there's so many things it could pick up.
Help you out with things, yeah. I don't know why I like this thing, but I'm looking at this. It's called the Limo Lawn Robot, and I just thought it looked cool. It looks like a little mini tank, and apparently this runs along and cuts your grass. But the only thing I wonder about with these things is that I don't know. It just, where does all the grass grow though? There's a
separate bag, or it takes it back to a bag. Gray, see, when you come to Edinburgh, there is something like that where I used to stay, actually. It's called More on the Lawn. It's got its own Twitter account. There is a robot, a robot lawnmower in the summer like that, that goes up and down. And it's on a verge, a ramp, a big patch of grass. It goes up and down, and it literally cuts all the grass, right? Mows all the grass. Wow. And all the tourists stop and look at it. And it's got its own Twitter account. I shit you not, it's got its own Twitter account.
Is there a camera on it? Can you see it live?
No, you can't see stuff? Live. No. But when you come to Edinburgh, I'll show you it because the tourists love it.
I mean, but I'm serious, man. Can you imagine them putting a GoPro on top of it so you could just sit there and watch it go?
Yeah, it would be cool. It'd be cool, but it's a gimmick. It works.
Yeah. Number nine here, the LG PF600U projector. I was wanting to know what you thought about that. I hear different things about television projectors, and I've heard good things and bad things. I don't know if it's really a good thing.
Projectors are, they've got, it's a niche thing for me. They've got their place in society. When I moved into my current flat, I went to a local audio video specialist chain in the UK called Richer Sounds. You've heard of them if you're in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I told them my plans and I wanted them to mock up a kind of idea of what they could give me. And I said, listen, I don't know whether to go large. It's got to be large, so large TV or projector. And I said, I would entertain both. Please give me your advice. And he told me the pros and cons and do not dare restart Windows Update, man. My God, the most inconvenient time, people.
I know, my name is later.
The guy told me the pros and cons for both. And what we basically, what we decided was TV then, because he said, listen, if you go for a 100-inch projector or a 100-inch TV, if your TV is good quality, to try and match the same quality in a projector at the same size, you're paying silly money. You know, so you can get projectors at 100-inch or bigger, actually. But for it to be really good quality, I'm talking about 4K, I'm talking about deep blacks, I'm talking about trying to match an OLED or as close as you can. Anti-reflections, not having to be in the dark room. He said, you're looking at thousands. He said, don't do that. Just go for what you can afford on a TV and it'll always be better quality. So they've got their place. And as long as you're not a visual snob like I am, they're excellent. But be careful about the little dinky ones that are like, oh, yeah, it's a 2-in-1. It's a box of cereal and it can project onto the, you know, or something in your phone. Like they're garbage. Junk. Stay away from them.
Yeah, all they do is magnify all the imperfections. They don't improve anything.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, but what was special about this one? I'm looking at it.
It says it's 1080p and it can go from 30 to 120 inches.
300 ANSI lumens of brightness, which is pretty bright my knowledge. Yeah. It doesn't.
You'd almost have to be that bright because one of the things that I always hear about projection TV is that you're subject to the wall you project it on. I mean, if you project it on a white wall or, obviously it'll be the best. If you project it on a black wall, I don't know if it would work at all.
Well, I was looking for the special feature in this and I couldn't find it, but it did say last year there was a rival brand that were able to hide a projector in a ceiling light. That's cool. Oh. Two-in-one purpose. I can't see a special feature of this one here. I think it's just the latest, greatest model on a budget, because if it's only 1080p, really 100-inch, that'll look crap.
Yeah, really.
You need 4K minimum.
Up to 120 inches, so you can imagine going 120.
Yeah, I mean, really, 120 inches, that's 8K territory, Gray, actually. Even 4K is starting to look a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, right.
I don't understand that part, but whatever. Let's see. Let's check the next one real fast to see if there's anything cool in there. Otherwise, we can just move on. The next one, let's see, has the Frame Pro TV. So this is supposed to look like a piece of art, so to speak. And actually, it's meant for that. In other words, you put it on your wall, and if you can't afford a Monet or a copy of a Monet, you actually program it to show the whatever art pictures you want, from the most famous to the ridiculous, whatever you want. And it basically, that's its purpose, is to sit there and just have paintings on the wall, literal paintings on the wall, to look as real as it can to the real thing. I think that's kind of cool, because there's a lot of times when you buy a painting or you buy a lithograph or whatever it is, you're hanging on your wall, you know, after whatever, a couple of years, you might get sick of it. And the only way you can change it is to go out and buy another one and put new holes in your wall and stuff like that. You know, or command strip, but this allows you to actually put up pretty much whatever you want.
Samsung done this before. This is not the first time I've heard of this. This must be just their latest or best iteration of it, because they have a line of TVs called the Gallery Edition or Gallery something, It's usually a G at the start. That's or signature TVs. They're their most expensive TV. One of their most expensive lines, short of the wall, which is mini micro LED TVs that clump, that kind of smack together like Lego bricks.
Really? Okay.
Or as they say in the States, Legos, which is wrong because it's Lego bricks. I asked Lego by the way. Lego told me that. Actually,
I don't doubt it.
That's the kind of thing I do because I'm OCD like that. But it's something that displays, and I've seen one up close. My friend's got one as well. It literally looks like a piece of art when it's turned off, and it's a good way, a low powered way of showing art at the same time. But the thing is, for it to work, it needs to be low profile and thin. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it looks awful because it sticks too far out the wall. So.
Oh, I just think that besides putting a painting, you could also put really great wallpaper that you like. I don't know. You could put up a Witcher 3 wallpaper, Superman.
You
could
get a picture of Grey and I up there if you wanted to. You know, like, watch the podcast on that. You know, why not?
To move down the list a little bit, there was one thing here. It's called the TCL Play Cube, and I'm like, okay, what does that mean? So it's a portable projector, battery powered, so it can go anywhere. And they call it a Magic Cube design, where you can easily angle the projected image in any direction. They don't really say much more about it, but they're calling it Play Cube. So I'm assuming that means it's made for people that want to project their game onto something, but take it on the go.
It's a portable projector.
Yeah.
It's Yeah.
I don't think it would be. I can't see how it would be that great. I mean,
no, this is designed for. It was little small portable projectors have their market. They're as long as you're not looking for quality, you're looking for something half decent at the very best to quickly show on the fly, and you don't want to be lugging a big projector about with you. It may be useful for that, but as it says here, actually, maybe it doesn't say. I'd imagine that's no more than 1080p. So,
yeah, it doesn't really give you a lot more information. So it's kind of hard to even.
There was an RTX 5090 in that list, which was amusing, but we already covered that. That's easily the best thing.
That's kind of the general, just knocking it off.
That's the gem.
I was looking at the next list, but I don't think I really see too much, really.
So you had the best gadgets, coolest gadgets, and best gadgets day one, day two, day three. Oh, it's the same thing, but over 3 days, right? Okay, I've got
Each list has got a bunch more they happen to see.
ThinkBook Plus from the third one.
Yeah, I was looking at that.
I saw this because I actually posted this in Discord, if you were paying attention, people. Linus Sebastian from Linus Tech Tips was on the Late Show, or is it the Late Late Show? I can't remember. What's the chap's name in the Late Show?
Was it Kimmel?
Yeah, Kimmel, Jimmy Kimmel. He had Linus on, and he was showing the coolest things from CES, and this laptop was on there. And this laptop's cool because it's got the rollable screen, so if you press a button, it rolls up the way. Now, the aspect ratio is bloody awful. It's basically TikTok ratio, like 9:16, so you're literally doom-scrolling for the rest of your shift. But it's cool what it can do. So.
Yeah, I mean it's more of a bragging thing right now. I can't really see it being all that useful. I guess it depends.
Not really. It'll be expensive, and if it breaks, I don't fancy having to pay for those motors to be replaced either. So
they dropped 32 gigs of RAM in it and a terabyte of storage.
Yes, it's going to be bloody expensive, man.
they never put the prices on. Not always, anyway.
But can it run Crysis 3 though?
Yeah, well, like, you know, we'll
that's
find
always
out.
A question. Can it? How many thousands of frames can it get and do?
I'll call them up and see if they'll give us a free one.
Sure, get two, because you're in a different region from me. Yeah, get two.
I was looking at something here where they're going. Razer Blade 16 looks like a whole thing from Razer, right? Mm-hmm. Usually that means money, but they also make some very good products. It looks like a whole layout to play your games, laptop. Everything. The Razer laptop is going to have a high resolution 240Hz OLED display, as well as new vapor chamber cooling system. Okay, they haven't set a price. They said the price will probably come out in March. So it looks very cool. Razer always makes some nice looking stuff, even if it is pretty expensive. And they usually do top of the line stuff. They're putting in an AMD AI9-HX370 CPU in the gaming laptop. So it looks pretty cool.
Well, the one I'm looking at has an RTX 5090 in it. Yes, there's 5090s in laptops, which blows my bloody mind.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
The one thing to bear in mind is laptop GPUs or laptop parts are the low-powered version. Mm. So while a 5090 has got a TDP of, what was it, like 550 watts or something stupid like that, the laptop variant is 155 watts. So basic physics and math tell you that it won't be able to kick out the same performance. So is it really a 5090? I argue no, but it's the most powerful GPU in a bloody laptop at the end of the day. And I'd hate to see the power brick for this laptop, mate. It'll be another laptop behind it trying to power this thing. It'll be huge. But that thing is a beast, and that will be thousands. That will be easily 3,000-4,000. I don't fancy paying for that.
Oh, yeah, that might even be cheap at that rate right there. I guess Asus ROG is kind of right behind them because they're putting out something called the Strix Scar. And this is going to be another laptop, but they're going to have 16 and 18-inch laptops. I haven't seen an 18-inch laptop I don't know how many years. I mean, the 17 is as big as I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of surprised, but then again, maybe not. It's going to have, accordingly to this, it says it can handle up to an RTX 5090 again. Mm-hmm. But they're going to put 64 gigs of RAM and 2 terabytes of SSD storage into it. They have a 3 millisecond response time on the monitor. Their monitor also at 240 hertz. So, God, I'm so glad I got a 240 hertz monitors. Two of them now. Months
ago. Are they both 240? Wait a minute. You've got.
Yeah.
What's the resolution? 1440p?
1440p, 240 hertz.
Right. Okay. Right.
I didn't originally buy it for future proofing hertz. It was the great deal. So I picked it up. And now I'm finding out because of all the multi-frame and other DLSS and all that stuff works better. Works even better with a higher refresh monitor. I'm like, great.
I was thinking you would go for 4K because that's well and truly future-proofing yourself. Because once you max the 240 at 1440p in a good graphics card, that could be pretty easy to do. You've got decent graphics card.
When I originally bought the first one, because the second one I found the same model on sale, so it was a little cheaper. But the first one time I bought it, I did look at 4K, except at that time, not so much now, but at that time, the 4K wasn't going to give me the frames that I really kind of wanted. I could get the frames on the 1440p definitely easier than a 4K. So I kind of just said, and when I took a look at how good it looked, I was just going like, damn, that looks great. So I just said, all right, I'm good. So probably I'll move to 4K, but I'll probably wait another year. Or more, maybe more.
There's a problem of getting more expensive components that you kind of need that monitor. Then as I said before, I want an OLED 240 hertz 4K monitor next, and that'll be hundreds. Literally cost me hundreds of pounds to get that. But it's the next step forward to make use of all these.
Well, and even though we like shiny things in 4K and stuff like that, the sweet spot is still 1440p. Some would argue, some would argue the sweet spot's still 1080p, although I think that's wrong.
I'll throw up. Yeah. Can't.
I mean, I can see 1440p being still king of the hill for another year or so, but slowly sliding down the hill.
Oh, longer than that, mate. 1080p was king for so long.
Well, the higher end people like us will move to 4K sooner than others. But yeah, I mean, the good thing out there for people that are listening to us is that if 1440p as well, you know, it will do you good, you know, period. I would suggest that if, depending on the budget you're on, try your best not to go 1080p on a monitor. Try to go at least 1440p, you know, at some reasonable size, you know, with a decent price, and then you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
It's once you go 4K, you find it difficult to go back. So.
Well, believe me, when I went to the 1440, there's no way in hell I go back to 1080p when I switched, I was
you can't. Anything else in your list you want to cover, Gray?
Nah, that's pretty much it. I was zipping through the rest of it, but those are probably the highlights.
Enough. All right. Well, you may as well carry on with your mod corner then. Give it some TLC that it deserves.
I haven't done mod corner in a little while, so I thought I'd throw something out there. And of course, I know a lot of things tend to be Witcher because it's just such a good game and people have such good mods. One of the things I think people are doing out there is creating more mods for Witcher because Witcher 3, because you got a long wait for Witcher 4. So because CD Projekt Red gave out the mod kit and let everybody use their assets, they can do some wild stuff. So apparently one called Witcher 3 Wild Hunt is getting a lot of notice and a lot of people really like it. Apparently this person put in some time with this thing. And basically it's going to have a lot of different extra missions on it. So you'll be able to go on different quests and stuff that you haven't seen before. There will be some video on this when we do the video podcast. I'll pop in some of it so that y'all can see us see it. There's another mod also called the Witcher of Kings and Killers, which is also getting a lot of notice. And again, all these are handcrafted quest lines with boss fights at the end. I mean, they're going all out with it. So it's not like they're not taking it seriously. They are. And these particular mods can usually all be found over at Nexus Mods. You can just Google Nexus Mods and find it. I'm really tempted, and I think I will even try to do Wild Hunt since I saw some video on it. You don't always see video on mods all the time. But this one was available on YouTube, and it really did look pretty good. The only drawback, and it's not really a drawback, to be honest, is they can't go out and hire the voice actors to do new lines. That would kill their budget for making a mod. However, they kind of carefully and smartly use the audio tracks that have been recorded in certain areas where it makes sense. So they write the quests so that the natural voices actors can blend into the quest line. However, when they have something where they can't do it, you go to the subtitles like the old days, you know, way back Dragon Age, what was it? Origins, the very first one where basically no one talked. It was all just lines underneath. So they'll actually put the lines underneath.
I hate that. I really do.
I do too, but I can understand when it comes to mods like that, your choice is to either find somebody that can do the lines, which would be kind of difficult.
Fallout London. They all done it for free. They did an excellent job.
No, and that was pretty amazing, to be honest. I didn't expect that. So, and they all work for free, like you said. No one's getting paid for any of this, which is amazing.
They got the rewards, didn't they? They got the rewards in the end, Gray. Their own business now, basically their own indie company. So,
So they might did actually work for them. But there's so many people that aren't going to get that. But they still just plot ahead. Hell, look at all the fan made Star Trek films out there. You go on YouTube and there's like a million of them.
I know. You sent me about half of those million that are out there, man.
Some of them I don't even bother because they're awful, but some of them are like surprisingly good. And again, because of AI and lots of other things, it's just getting easier and easier to do some of this stuff.
And a really quick small plug as well, Gray. You just reminded me, for those that like sci-fi and Star Trek and stuff, I haven't been doing a lot of stuff on my channel, the Capes and Phasers one, recently because I've been so busy, but Gray and I will be reviewing and going over the Section 31 movie that's releasing this Friday or the day or so after the podcast, so tune in for that over my channel if that's your cup of tea.
And we still don't have a release date for Strange New World Season 3, even though they're already filming Season 4.
Ah, it's alright.
We'll get it eventually. Anyway, that's pretty much it for the mod corner and stuff. I will try, I think, this mod and report back on it. That's that for my thing.
Cool beans. All right. So we'll carry on with some of the news. Mm-hmm. I touched on this article last week, but we were kind of running out of time and I wanted to go over a little bit more. And that was the Microsoft or the Xbox handheld that they were kind of talking about. In fact, it's something they're working on. So they have announced that they just haven't given any more details than that, which is fair enough. And this all comes from basically they're wanting the best of Xbox and Windows together. And The Verge, this is coming from The Verge, they were speaking to Microsoft's VP, Jason Ronald. And he was talking about the future of gaming handhelds. And I'll literally just read some of the stuff that he was talking about, because I found it an interesting article. So he was saying, quote, we've been really innovating for a long time in the console space. And as we partner across the industry, it's really about how we bring these innovations that we've incubated and developed in the console space and bring them to PC and bring them to the handheld gaming space. He said, he continues by saying, it would also, I would say it's bringing the best of Xbox and Windows together because we've spent the last 20 years building a world-class operating system. Okay, whatever you say there, my friend. Okay. Just bring back Windows 10. But it's really locked to the console, said Ronald. What we're doing is really focusing how we bring these experiences for both players and developers to the broader Windows ecosystem. At the end of the day, our goal is to make Windows great for gaming on any device. The reality is the Xbox operating system is built on top of Windows, which makes sense. So there's a lot of infrastructure that we built into the console space that we can bring to PC space and really deliver that premium gaming experience on any device. So the reason I think this is significant and important is because if you try to play, and I count myself in this category, Gray, I've played a gaming handheld that's got Windows on it. It's not really designed for it. They didn't factor it in. It's a bit clunky. It's not great. This is why the Steam Deck is so popular, because it's based off of Linux, which has been heavily customized by Valve to bring a really good gaming experience. Now, gaming Windows has got better, but it hasn't matched SteamOS yet, hence why SteamOS is becoming its own thing and rolling out now as we speak. Whether you like it or not, Windows is a massive platform out there in the world. And the Xbox system on its own, if you've ever used it, is very good. I like it. A lot of kind of big tiles and stuff. It's a bit like big screen mode on Steam. If you ever launch, if you ever use a controller, Gray, Xbox controller on
what's
Steam.
It launches a
big... picture platform, it's called, or something like that, which looks cool. I think they're kind of going for the same thing there, to be honest with you. And it's about bringing these two things together. But it's easier said than done. I think they looked at Switch and they went, okay, Nintendo Switch, we like what you've done. We want to do something similar. So whether they bring out this handheld at the same time as their next games console, which will come out, I think it's next year maybe, so it'll be 2 years, 1 to 2 years ahead of the PlayStation 6. We don't know if they'll bring it out at the same time or bring it out at a different time, or whether they'll have different requirements, because like their Xbox Series S and X, if you bring out a game for one, you have to bring out a game for both. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes, but I'd imagine it'll be part of the same ecosystem, and they're literally making their next handheld something that's a lot more like a Switch or like a Steam Deck, because these things are excellent to use. They really are. And we'll come to PSX in a moment, because that could get them the start they really, really wanted. So, so moving on, before I get to the PSX stuff here, I don't know if anyone's seen this. In our Discord, I posted an article about... The DLSS bosses, I'm calling them, NVIDIA DLSS, the high hegemon of the DLSS department. He was speaking to the Digital Foundry guys. They do excellent articles. I love the DF boys. And he sat down and spoke to them. He basically did not rule out possible frame generation support for RTX 30 series cards. Now, as any businessman will tell you, it's about trying to make as much money as possible and all about the profit, hence why DLSS is 4.0 is for their new cards and only for the new cards. But I think they're trying to be realistic and reasonable by, if they can, making this as backwards compatible as they can, but still trying to get you to go out and buy their new cards. So they are trying to basically move as much of this over as they can, and to get frame generation support or multi-frame gen support for their older cards is useful. I think I said last week, Gray, that they're already trying to, in fact, they will be releasing updated drivers to get more bang for your buck from DLSS. It's difficult to say that. DLSS 3.5. I think we're on 3.7.
It's called DLSS.
No, DLSS. DLSS. Oh, it's a lot bloody easier. So I like the fact that they're not completely ignoring the people that are got older gen cards, air brackets there, because they will still make up the majority of your business. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to be big, bad, nasty Nvidia, because people will really just go off you and actually stop buying your cards. So
I frankly got to, I guess, applaud Nvidia, because to be honest, they always like to be big, bad, and nasty because they know they got you by the you-know-whats. So I kind of figured, oh, they're never going to backwards compatible.
They got you by the CUDA cores, Gray.
Yeah, by the CUDA cores. And so I figured there's no way they're going to, you know, make this backward compatible with 4,000 or 3,000 series cards because they want you to buy the 5,000 series. Then when they actually did it, I thought about it from a marketing standpoint. I'm going like, okay, there's really two reasons I could see. One, it's good press because, you know, hey, look how nice we are. We're going to give this to you. But secondly, it actually does make sense in a marketing aspect for the 5,000 series, because some people, once they get a taste of some of the functions of the DLSS 4.0, even though it's not going to be multi-frame generation, they may be wanting to buy 5,000. So I guess it makes sense all the way around.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad we have 4,000 series cards, you and I, because we'll get something out of it. I think we'll get a wee bit better frame rate, but it's not going to be the multi-frame like we, you know, like the 5.
No, but I don't have the monitor for that. You do. that's designed for really high frames, because yeah. You saw some of their videos. They're literally double and tripling their frame count at times, which I don't have the monitor for that. I've got 144 hertz. Good quality frames I get for that, but mm-hmm. I would need to get another. I mean, I'm going to try and hopefully get 5080. We'll see.
Well, I mean, technically, because I have a 240 hertz monitor, I'm a good candidate for the 5000 series car. Am I going to buy it? And hell no.
Are you though? Because you're 1440p. So if you got a 5080, that'd be overkill. I would get a 5070. I'm not saying you're going to, but if you were going
to. No, I'm not, you know. But they're all saying, no matter what, that it's taking advantage of the higher hertz. So,
yeah.
But I'm not buying it for that reason, that's for sure. I mean, I'm fine with the 4000. I'll probably end up hanging on to my 4000 until they come out with a 6000.
So it's good. It's good that NVIDIA are doing this. You said, like you say, it's a good thing. I don't think they were being big, bad, and nasty before. I think, I mean, literally the hardware isn't the same, literally mm-hmm. and figuratively, mm-hmm. on the 4,000, the 3,000 series cards as it is in the 5,000. And in this article, they are talking about RTX 30 series trying to do as much as they can. But the Tensor cores, which is what is responsible for the AI side of things, the mm-hmm. CUDA cores is the rasterization performance, and the Tensor cores is what's responsible for the AI. Bear in mind, Gray, 20 series NVIDIA cards was the first generation of AI, and it was basic. There wasn't many Tensor cores. And each generation, they increased them. So the 3000 series don't have anywhere near the Tensor cores as a 4000 and a 5000. Right. So there's only so much you can do with the hardware. So that's fine. Whatever they can do helps us mere peasants until we step out of peasantville.
When do you think they're going to change the name Tensor cores to AI cores? You know it's coming.
I mean, you need a catchy title. You need some technical catchy title for it. They've always done that. So I like Tensor cores. Yeah,
no, they could call it a super AI cores.
They could do.
Extra AI cores. AI core. No.
Are you finished?
Yeah.
So over in the corner. this last article Gray brought across my desk, which I found interesting. I take with a pinch of salt because it's quite a bit in the future, although they're already be working heavily on this by now, is PS6 leaks and rumors, which, you know, like, we've not long had the PS5 Pro out, but as they've said in interviews before, Mark Cherney, his name is, I think the lead architect for Sony, he said that literally once they bring out a console, they start working on the next one. So they'll already be working heavily on the PS6, which is rumored to not come out for a while yet, still 2028, because they've got a pro model. I think this is why Microsoft bringing out their next Xbox instead of a pro model is genius, along with a handheld, because if they bring that out at the end of next year, say they bring that out for holiday 2026, Gray,
Right.
They'll get a massive market share, which helps because they have lost every generation pretty much since they came out. Mm-hmm. So that'll be useful. But the PS6, I saw the picture of it I'm looking at the moment, it just looks like a feckin' PS4. PS4 Pro, it's just no imagination at all with like an orange light around it. So
We know the outside box will change. So
oh, yeah. I mean, a box is just a box. As long as I want them to go back to an older design because the PS5 does not look like a PlayStation. It's ugly, I think. So, yeah, what I find useful here at the moment, they're in the pre-silicon validation stage. So I think they're just, what that's pretty much meaning is they haven't 100% confirmed what SoC system on a chip they're going to use, but they're probably close to it. Mm-hmm. The rumors are it will feature an AMD semi-custom APU with a Zen 5. That's how far we're going ahead. Zen 5 CPU and UDNA GPU capable of 4K 120 FPS. So at the moment, they're saying that the PS5 Pro can comfortably, more air brackets, people, do 4K 60. So now we're looking at 4K 120, which is the next step, or 8K 60, which is interesting. Now, the real cool bit of this article, which, again, take with a large pinch of salt, but it makes sense. The console is rumored to include X3D cache and advanced AI upscaling technology. Now, if Tar was here, he'd be talking with me about the AMD 9800 X3D, the best gaming CPU out at the moment, and why. And because it's that 3D cache and lots of it that make it as good as it is. And that's why there's such a shortage of those chips at the moment. Bringing that to a console makes sense. And in some kind of, even if it's stripped down gray, if it's not the full fat, I wouldn't imagine it would be. That would give it a massive competition, because if they've got some catching up to do in Xbox, in theory, they'll need the superior performance, potentially. So yeah, I find that really, really cool. They are saying, well, they're still in the pre-silicon validation stage. The design itself is complete. So maybe they're thinking actually how it looks, because that's probably the easiest part to do. And then they work on what chip they're going to use. I mean, there will be the latest version of FSR in there. At the moment, it's 4. They're saying it's still going to be FSR 4 then. I'd like to think we'd be a higher version.
Yeah, I would think so.
This is why, Gray, when you gave me this article, it was fascinating. I think I that's why I'm saying to people, take it in a whole bloody tub of salt, because I'm probably calling bullshit on it. However, some of the things it does state do make sense.
And I think so. I think it's like anything else. They're probably just talking about what they know they can do and then just adding on the fluff after it.
Oh, of course.
First question, but you already answered it, was going for 120 on 4K FPS. That is, I was immediately thinking that can't be natural. That's got to be AI. And then you answered the question by saying AI.
AI upscaling. That'd be a better, more advanced version.
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to do native. I was going to go like, ooh, native. No, that would be.
They can't. You probably struggle to do that. Normal PC, never with rasterization performance, never mind the latest AI help out there. So, no. FSR 5, actually, it's saying here, probably in the next version. Add another one on, of course.
So when are they going to start calling, like, and this is an age-old thing I'm going to say, but when are they going to start calling consoles computers?
Well, they're based off the
technically they are, and they get more like it all the time.
They are. They're based off the x86 architecture, which was very, very common. It's what there is a consortium out there called the x86 or whatever they're called consortium. Yeah. It's got AMD, Intel, and whatnot in it, and it's a common standard. The one exception I could think of in recent times was the PlayStation 3, which was not based in that. It was based in its own random chip, which was horrible to design for, and that's why the PS3 struggled against Xbox 360 until designers and devs took most of the generation to get used to the chip, and then by the end of the generation, it was cranking out beautiful titles, and it overtook Xbox at the end of it. because I had an Xbox 360. I wasn't a fan of PS3. And then that generation after that one, I switched to Sony because Xbox's consoles were just inferior then. Not bad, just inferior. So yeah, I find that pretty interesting. Again, take it with a large bloody tub of salt, but it is what it is. And then Gray, you've got some tech news of your own you're going to add into the mix.
I thought this was interesting. I was running through articles. Apparently Nvidia has created a supercomputer, and when I heard the cool headline, I'm going like, wait a minute, supercomputer. So when did they get into that market, A? And B, are they talking about a room sized computer that can do, like, you know, ultra petraflops and everything else? Not quite.
Petraflops? Did you just make that up?
No, that's a real thing.
Petraflops. Yeah. No, petaflops.
Close enough.
Is it Petra or Petra? I actually don't know, Greg.
I don't know, but it's close. It's either Petra or Petra, Petra, whatever. So as I started looking into it a little bit, I'm going like, so what are they talking about? In fact, they even mentioned that it's a petaflop. There you go. Mini PC wonder. I'm going, petaflop, mini, what? It takes 100 months to get equal AI performance for 1/25th of the cost. And I'm like, okay. So I start reading a little more into this. And apparently they put together a thing, a project, they call it Project Digits. It's a fully formed, off-the-shelf supercomputer built into a size of a mini PC. Okay, and it's small. I'm really surprised when they said this, because I'm sitting there going like, well, okay, first thing I ever heard about it. Apparently, there was a computer called the DGX-1 that launched back in 2016 as a mini supercomputer. But that thing sold for $129,000 with a 16-core Intel Xeon CPU. But the Digits version is only $3,000. And I'm like, wow, that's quite a bit over time. NVIDIA confirms that it has the AI performance of 1,000 teraflops at FP4 precision. This is getting into the high-end enterprise kind of stuff here. And not the US's enterprise. But anyway, there's no really any direct comparison to it, but they have built it. It does work. Apparently, it has about half the processing power of a fully loaded 8-card Pascal-based DGX-1, which I told you before was $129,000. So apparently, at the heart of the Digits is a chip called a GB10 SoC chip with 20 ARM cores, which compromises 20 ARM Cortex, 20 ARM all different Cortex things. Blackwell GPU, which is a light version of the B100, it says in here. Power consumption, they're saying, is only 100 watts. So I'm finding some of this very fascinating and even a little hard to believe, but apparently they have them out now. And then I kind of wondered, like, well, why did they bother with a mini supercomputer? Not that it's not cool, but why is NVIDIA bothering with it? And it was interesting. The guy pointed out,
because they can.
Exactly. And that's kind of the way the guy in the article inferred. They said, look, this is not unusual for a company to sit there and do stuff like this, because they themselves want to try to future-proof, and they themselves want it to get on the radar of everybody before anyone else, so that they can take the advantage of being first.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes sense. That makes sense. It was interesting. They said that their main mission is to place an AI supercomputer on the desk of every data scientist, AI researcher, and student to empower them and engage a shape in the age of AI. So for $3,000, I mean, if I had a bunch of money to burn, I would be tempted to buy a supercomputer for $3,000. I mean, the stuff you could do with a supercomputer would be amazing. I mean, so that's really cheap. And they showed up.
But can it run Crisis?
Why would a supercomputer run Crisis? The Crises that aren't even made yet. they show a design box, but really it looks pretty awful, actually. But then it doesn't really have to look that good, because it's just a little thing. I will put the picture in our video bot podcast so that you can see it, people that are listening on the audio. Okay. I really would like to see this, but that's amazing. $3,000 for a mini supercomputer is cool.
Yeah, agreed.
My next story is purely because I just thought it was cool and not, for no other reason. I mean, yeah, you're not going to really be able to, the normal person is not going to be able to afford this, but there is a new drive out there. It's called the Memblaze. The exact model number is PBlaze 7940. It has 30.72 terabytes. It's an enterprise SSD, massive capacity and performance. So imagine this box. It's not very big. I mean, it's you know, I'll show pictures of it as well. And it has 30 terabytes SSD. You'd never worry about storage for a hell of a long time with 30 terabytes, although some people will fill anything up, though, right? So it's always possible. It's in a class of its own, obviously. It has up to 2.7 million RRI ops. I don't even know how that is, to be honest, but it's big.
So why are you telling us about it if you don't know what it is?
I'm just kind of reading for the people out there that know what it is. It's power efficient. It's capable. They said that they took this thing and tried it out, and they couldn't even find a con. There was all just pros. I mean, it was so funny. I see cons, none.
The price.
Yes, I'm getting to that. It's going to be $2,500. You know, but hey, look, it's a 30 terabyte enterprise, you know, edition SSD. I mean, it's gigantic, you know, and it's not slow. It's very fast, equal to if not outpacing the faster SSDs out there. So, again, if I had money to burn, I would definitely pick up one of these in a heartbeat. I think that would be cool. Oh, I can't hear your mic for some reason.
Sorry, I forgot to unmute. No, you wouldn't ever buy that, you nutter, because the amount of money that would take, and you would never use anywhere near that.
No, I mean,
storage. You buy a supercomputer, yes.
If we're fantasizing for a second, I would sooner buy the supercomputer before I would buy this, but.
Exactly.
Again, if I had money to burn and I didn't care, I'd get both because, hey, what do you need with a supercomputer? A giant SSD. Come on. I mean, you know, you're supercomputing a lot of stuff. Anyway, I thought that was kind of cute. I mean, if you can afford that. And if any of us are listening out there, if you have money to burn, you want to buy one of these things, please let us know because we want to know how it works. We want to know how much fun you're having with it.
I would love to know.
Yeah. Anyway, basically that finishes my hardware tech news for this time around.
Right. Okay. Well, I've actually got some gaming news. I try to keep up with that as well. I know I seem like the hardware guy sometimes, but I actually do like to keep up with some of the gaming news. And by the way, we have been playing a bit of gaming. You know, like we played COD Zombies last week, which we talked about, and we'll be playing a bit more Zombies with our friends after this recording, hopefully. If they show up, that is. Mm-hmm. Game news wise, I found this a little bit sad. Sony, things are going on at Sony that they're not great mm-hmm. with some of their design, with some of their directions that they're going in, basically. And this article came across me, and it's basically Sony canceling two more. Live service games that reportedly include a God of War title. Really? Now, these studios that were involved here were Bend and Blue Point. Now, Bend Studios are the guys that brought you Days Gone, which is one of the best games I've ever played. And it came out to mixed reception. I think that's why the second one was canned. Mm. And Blue Point Studios are famous for doing many things, but one of them is Bloodborne, which is a big title out there as well. Now, this all stems from Sony buying, I think it was Bungie. No, I don't think they did buy Bungie because they were a live service studio, which they kind of were. They migrated into that with Destiny 2, which is one of the biggest examples of a mostly successful live service game. Mm-hmm. And they basically bought them, but they kept them autonomous. So they could do their own thing and they wouldn't interfere too much until they had to step in and interfere a little bit. And they basically took them round all their portfolio, and they said, Sony said to Bungie, like, listen, tell us what's good and what's not out there in terms of what we can carry on project-wise and what we should can, you know, because you guys are the experts in live service. And that's when they cancelled a live Last of Us game, which would have been potentially excellent, because I played a game back in the day, Last of Us Part 1, called Factions, which was a free multiplayer bolted on to the game, which was brilliant. I absolutely loved it. It was a great concept. And they canned that. Even though we know Naughty Dog make excellent, excellent games. But two more have been cancelled, and I think this is coming down from...
Wait,
this
before is also, you go to the next two, why
would they I'm still in the same article.
Yeah, but why would they say Last of Us would cancel? Why would they cancel that? It's such a popular title, a TV show, stuff like that.
Ask Sony and Bungie. I think that information stays classified in-house.
Man, because I could see if it was some other, you know, so-so game or one we haven't really heard
Naughty
much
Dog
about.
Don't make bad games. They just don't make bad games. They make a lot of money.
Right.
Strange. So, yeah, kind of moving on with the same article. I feel sorry for Bend Studios because, let's say, they played Days Gone was phenomenal. They are pretty much a waste of a resource. Bluepoint as well, two great studios making great games, and Sony just don't know how to use them properly. A live service God of War game might sound great. Maybe in theory it would have flopped. I don't know, but just God of War is a massive franchise. They were, I don't know if it was Bend or Bluepoint or both, were running support for God of War. I'm trying to think of the... I can't remember the name of the studio. Santa Monica Studios, maybe, I want to say. Mm-hmm. They were running support for those guys there to help get this massive title out there. I think they're just shitting the bed, Gray, because of what happened with Concord.
That's true.
And the guy that literally bought the studio, they're responsible for Concord, Firewalk Studios, I think they're called. Mm-hmm. He bought them after seeing what the very early concepts of this game way years ago. Like, we're talking about 7 years ago or something. He saw first looks at this game. I went, this is excellent. I'm going to buy the studio just based on that. This guy, I think, still got a job with Sony to this day, which blows my mind, after the hundreds of millions he's wasted of Sony's money. So I think they're just shitting themselves. Between Bungie making a foo bar on cancelling a good game, and then Concord taking a nosedive because it was a game out of its time. We'd already done the hero shooter, we moved on. So this is a bloody damn shame. I don't know if they give them new projects to work on, these two studios, we might not very well see them to PS6, which is a shame, but, you know, it is what it is.
I bet you they'll take the two studios and try to combine them.
Well, you absorb them, and then they become a shadow of their former selves. They're there in name and name only.
We'll take the best people and put them to work, which would be the only good idea they could come up with out of this.
Yeah, that's too bad.
I would like to have seen what would have happened with a live service God of War. That could have been interesting.
That's
of course, we have a fight over who's going to play Kratos, unless we had Kratos 1, Kratos 2. a whole bunch of Kratoses running around.
Right, so moving on from that story.
Uh-huh.
Rumor, and it's a rumor I believe, some games, third-party games, that will probably come out for the Nintendo Switch 2. I'm not even going to say this year, but throughout its generation, but probably this year. And these are all Microsoft games. Now, we've heard a lot of Microsoft games coming out to different platforms because they're not doing the exclusive thing anymore. They want to make money, and it's a smart move, if you ask me. Any box could be an Xbox, is one of their sayings. And don't be surprised if you see Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox, at the Nintendo Direct in April, that they wouldn't release all the games and more information about the Switch 2. Don't be surprised if you don't get a segment from him talking about the games being released. And some of these leaks are Diablo 4, Fallout 4, I don't know why they don't mention 76, but Fallout 4, Starfield. Yeah, interesting. Will all be ported. Yeah, well, they'll come probably to the Switch 2 and probably come there because the Switch 2 will have the DLSS support. So it can upscale these things. It won't look as good as a PS5 or Xbox Series X, but as long as it looks better than the bloody current Switch at the moment, that's the main thing. I think that's a no-brainer, Gray. I think Microsoft are wanting their... They've got their finger in many pies, and they want their finger in all the pies. I think exclusivity is a thing of the past for them. It will always remain a thing for Sony, at least, because that's all they've really got for people to come out and still buy more of their consoles. So the one I found the most interesting, and there is more stuff here, Microsoft Flight Simulator. Now, I know you might think on a Switch that won't make sense.
To Switch?
No, don't interrupt. Come on, let me finish. This is important. Okay. I know you'd come in. Okay. I know you come in and interrupt me. That's why I put the caveat on. Wait for it. Right now, Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024 is a small download on a PC. It's about 16 gig. Right? Okay. 16 gig. That doesn't make sense for Flight Simulator, does it? The reason being, most of the work is done on the cloud. So you do need an internet connection. Because of its live streaming of data in and out. So it will work very well on a Switch 2 because the same thing will happen there. So don't worry about that. That would be a cool, chill game to play in a console, actually, if the FPS is decent enough. Call of Duty, more examples. The Microsoft signed a deal with Nintendo to bring games out for that anyway. I don't think it'll be Black Ops 6 because that was already a thing well and truly in the pipe work before anything was inked. But they'll then work on the next Call of Duty, which will come out in October, November, and that will come out for because the thing is, there hasn't been a COD for the Switch for a while, or for a Nintendo console for a while. The last one was Black Ops 1, I want to say, for the Wii U. Because COD games used to come out on Nintendo platforms, but not in the Switch.
Yeah,
the Switch
I don't keep track of it like you do, but I didn't even know that. I didn't think COD...
Oh, it was a staple. It was a staple, mate. Really? All the way back. So
it
COD should
that good,
be
though. No.
Well, yeah, because before the Wii console, Nintendo would keep up for the most part in terms of hardware, in terms of power, and then they just stopped. They went, we're not going in that direction. Like it or loathe it, I kind of loathe it because not having the latest hardware is kind of sucks. But Nintendo made it work very well with the Wii and the Switch. You can't deny their success. They have a lower powered platform because they innovated in unique, special ways. People will still buy them for the Nintendo first party games, always.
By the way, I have a question for you, and you might have the answer to. Is this an exclusive deal? In other words, what I mean by that is, would you see PlayStation coming next to Nintendo and saying, like, hey, we're going to...
Yes. Yes, I do. Yeah. I mean, you're already seeing some of these examples coming out anyway. Xbox don't care who's bad to get into now, as long as they can make money from it. So it's not just about Nintendo. They'll do the same with Sony as well. Some games already start to come out with Sony. Sea of Thieves is a great example off the top of my head. There are heavy rumors that the Master Chief, their final Holy Grail, their Xbox mascot will come out to these platforms, including Sony, including Switch 2. And it'll probably start with Halo, the Master Chief Collection, which is Halo 1, 2, and 3 remastered. Better graphics, better FPS. And it's all been on the PC for a while now. So these are no-brainers. It's all about making money. The thing is, Xbox have to do this because they don't have the same quality first-party titles, in my opinion, that Sony does. They've got Master Chief, they've got Halo, and their last Halo game wasn't that great, I don't think. There's so many problems, it barely came out. They brought it out at a basic level, like they brought out just one mode of the game and then they had to build on other versions, and it was a mess. I find that is fascinating, especially Starfield and Flight Simulator, to see those games on a Switch, I think would be pretty. Oh, another thing was, stick drift is a big problem on a lot of controllers, especially Switch, because it's kind of built in. And for those that don't know what I mean, literally, if you just leave the game sitting and you're not doing anything, and Mario starts running slowly to the side of the screen and you've not moved anything, it's stick drift. It's wear and tear gray of the thumbstick, the controller, and it just starts moving in one direction by default. The only way to eliminate that is Hall Effect joysticks, which use magnets and alleviate wear and tear or minimize wear and tear because they don't have the same kind of moving parts.
If it was a car, it would be a front end alignment.
It'd be a what now?
Instead of if it was quick. A car, it'd be a front end alignment.
Front end alignment. I don't drive, so
when your car starts to drift, that's what you do. You have to get it aligned.
Oh,
isn't the Switch 2 using the Hall Effect?
Rumored to be, but it's not been confirmed because you saw the trailer the same as me, mate. So very little was revealed.
Okay.
The Nintendo had, I don't know if they had lawsuits, but they certainly had to bring out a program where you could send in your Joy-Con to get repaired or replaced. And I done it once as well because it was such a problem. So yeah, they don't want that again because it cost them money. So they would invest more in Hall Effect, I think, for this, which does cost more, naturally. Getting that out of the way. The last part of Switch 2 news, which there'll be lots of this coming out. So the direct for the software is 2nd of April. However, there will be a number of places around the world where you'll be able to play ahead of time before its official release. And I'll just mention this quickly just now. In North America, you'll be able to play it in New York, Los Angeles, Dallas, and Toronto, all several days through April. If you just Google that, I don't want to mention every single one. Europe in April and May. I don't know why we've got more, maybe because we're superior. I don't know. I had to say that one when the yank was on.
That one in there.
I had to do that. Yeah, that's what she said. So you'll be able to play that in Paris, London, Milan, Berlin, Madrid, and Amsterdam. Where's bloody Edinburgh?
Yeah, I don't know.
Come on.
That's crazy,
man. Disgusting. Nah, of course, London always gets that stuff. It's too far away from me, 400 miles. I'm not traveling 400 miles.
UK, we should go to, London. That's it.
No, they always go to the biggest city. 8 million people in London or whatever. I won't be traveling down there to play a bloody games console.
Yeah,
doing that. And for Gray, he'd have to go to New York to play. And that's a 3-hour flight or something. So screw that. Oceania, we're Melbourne. The Kiwis don't get any love there. And in Asia, we're looking. In Melbourne, it's only in May, actually. Asia, we've got April, May, and June. I mean, Nintendo are Japanese, I get it. So we get Tokyo, Seoul, Hong Kong, where else have we got? Oh, yeah, we get Taiwan as well. Taipei. That'll have massive queues for people to play that great. This because some of the gaming events that we used to go down to for Insomnia and whatnot, the stalls down there, Nintendo would always be there with the latest DLC or Mario Kart. Queues to play that would be huge. So, and I'm not a Nintendo fanboy. I do like the Nintendo, but I'm not a fanboy, so I'll give that one a miss. What was the last thing I had here? Yeah. I think that's the last thing, is it? Let me double check. That was the last. I knew there was something else sitting in there.
Are you talking about the superior? No, never mind.
Superiority of Europe. There will be another Nintendo Direct rumored to be next month, but it won't be anything to do with the Switch 2. Imagine announcing your next best bit of hardware, Gray, right? Dangling that carrot in front of you for a couple of months' time. But going here, we're doing a special on the peasant console version next month. Are you interested? Now, the Nintendo fanboys and gals will go, yes, of course we are.
Yeah.
But we're, as enthusiasts and fans, are like, we're giving me the next best thing.
Yeah.
Come on, well, man.
I'm surprised how many different places they're going to be doing a Switch 2 across April, May, et cetera. Especially since they haven't announced when it's going to come out. But I guess, assuming from those dates, I guess we're looking more like third quarter this year or something.
What, for release?
Yeah.
I think a third-party developer said between April and September. I will narrow it down and say between June and August, because if they're doing these things over April, May,
right,
it'll be June at the earliest. Makes sense.
Plus, if you're going to make an announcement, why wouldn't you want to make an announcement after these particular events? Because everybody's going to be like hyped to the max.
Well, they'll probably announce it at April so they know when it's coming. So when you're playing it for the first time at one of these venues, one of these destinations, you'll know when it's coming out. It'll just be ahead of time.
Well, the good thing is we're going to know a lot about the unit when everybody starts messing with it across April.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So all the stories will be coming out.
Advertising 101.
Yeah.
Next month when they bring out this Nintendo Direct, which is more about the current Switch, read between the lines, it will be for the current Switch. However, some of these titles that we'll talk about will be multi-platform. We've seen this before with Nintendo and other companies. You will see, you might even see Metroid Prime 4, which has been in development for bloody years, 7 years.
I've heard about this for the longest time.
They kept scrap. They announced it at the start of Switch 1 generation in 2017, which was hilarious. And then we never saw it again until just last year.
Like an Elder Scrolls.
But it's coming out this year. 110% coming out this year, because they showed they announced that this year is the launch, and they showed an up-to-date trailer. That will be Switch 1 and 2. So there'll be other games as well. Another thing as well, Craig, here's an interesting concept. How would they approach Switch 1 games on Switch 2? For example, I'm thinking of not Zelda Breath of the Wild, but more Tears of the Kingdom, the most recent one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you want to see that in higher resolution and higher frames, will Nintendo release that as a free patch? Will they do what Sony do and charge a $10, £10 uplift, which is reasonable? Nintendo,
they're going to charge something.
Or they might actually just bring out another version of it and call it the Switch 2 version, the remaster, and then charge almost a full price again. We don't know which avenue they'll take.
Yeah, I hope not. But
they should release it as a free patch. Don't be harsh.
Because, you know, what might happen too, where I'm thinking, is that depending on the type of AI they have in Switch 2, would be something that would, like you had started to say, enhance your Switch 1 games. Now, if that's true, and you could pop a Switch 1 card in there to play, and it's, I don't know, upscaled 10%, 20%, 25%, whatever, that could be a big deal, because then people would be, you know, have a whole new lease on life with their library, which would then possibly spur sales, which and then possibly would spur people wanting to get even better and moving into the Switch 2, blah, blah, blah.
That's why you don't cannibalize your sales by doing something silly, by saying only Switch, you can only play these games in Switch 2. Right. That'd be silly.
But when they're going backward compatible, they can actually offer the fact that, hey, look, it's backward compatible, and our AI will upscale your Switch 1 experience XYZ.
On the other side of the coin is you also need to be wanting people to buy your new console, your Switch 2, so you have to bring out some games that are exclusive. Otherwise, some people are
are
only interested in the game and not the hardware. We'll just stick with the Switch 1. I just saw your text message, Gray, just checking in about the podcast recording in 5 minutes. He's such an OCD freak, man. I actually arrived bang on time, but I think he panics.
Hey, man, you're not the only one that has like OCD things.
Oh, yeah, I thought mine was bad and then I met you. Yours is worse than mine. I do find that interesting. When you see this direct next month, don't completely dismiss it if you are interested in the Switch 2 stuff, because read between the lines, what you see there may be useful for the Switch 2 going forward. So just bear that in mind. That is the last thing on that end. You also have some gaming news to share with us, Greg, I believe.
Sure do. I'll start this out. We love Doom, you and I, and many other people. And so we always like to listen to what's going on with the new Doom, the Dark Ages, and ID Software. But this is kind of interesting. ID Software came out and announced that Doom, the Dark Ages, which is coming out this year, will take full advantage of the NVIDIA's GeForce RTX 50 series hardware and AI capabilities. apparently this Doom title is going to ship with path tracing and support for DLSS 4 on day one.
Oh, nice.
Day one. ID said that NVIDIA's version of leveraging...
It's id Software. Sorry, my man.
Id, yeah.
People go nuts when you say that.
I know, I'm sorry.
Fanatics.
Id Software, sorry. Id said that NVIDIA's... NVIDIA's vision of leveraging AI to push visual fidelity and performance, quote, closely aligns with its own, and that in recent years, NVIDIA and id Software's collaboration on technology and graphics has only increased. So if you're going to make a case for how good DLSS 4 could be on a 50s card, why wouldn't you go with Doom? Because Doom has always been and probably always will be the best looking damn game out there. I mean, it's up on my top three lists as far as just pure looks. I mean, regardless of the fact that the gameplay is fantastic.
It's gorgeous.
And I still say this to this day, it is the best optimized game hands down out of any freaking game I've seen or played. It always is. And every time I see people coming out going like, well, you know, the game's pretty good, but it's not optimized. And I'm going like, go look at Doom. What are they doing? Can everybody just kind of like take lessons from id Software? I mean, you don't have these issues with Doom. Zero. And you would think you would because it's a fast paced, lots of stuff going on in that game. So optimization errors in that game would kill it. Absolutely kill it. So you should learn from somebody that knows how to do it. Don't give me this optimization bullcrap. Just go to id and say, how do you do it, man? Apparently, they said they're going to said the drivers when they're released, the 50 drivers, RTX 50 drivers, will be released and ready to go and be rock solid. They've already been testing them and so forth. They said that it's going to, in the path trace visuals, it's going to be silky smooth. Silky smooth is what you want on a Doom game, especially when you're shooting all those guys. So this is going to be exciting. It just I'm getting so jazzed for this. This is one of the very, very few games that I actually pay full price.
This is a game that you need decent hardware for, at least, because you want to be able to run it at its full glory and high FPS anyway. And I know it's optimized, but you still need good hardware for that, because it is, if you try to run Doom on it, when it's sluggish, it's not fun.
Yeah, not at all. They did mention that it says Doom Dark Ages will use ray tracing to enhance gameplay. I never heard of it put that way. Enhance gameplay for per pixel hit detection for complex materials like leather, fur, and various metals. Okay, that's interesting. If I had the money to burn one more time, I would only buy an RTX 50 because of this game. Because of Doom, I would do that if I had
that. Was that material thing you were talking about last week, Gray? The material, what did they call it?
The neural terminology.
That was cool.
Yeah, so yeah, it should look good, especially with something like that. I think it would be just outrageous. So I can't wait till that game comes out. I wish they would just pre-order now so I could get it. I mean, it's just I'm down with it. As soon as I hear pre-order, I got it.
Yeah.
Deluxe edition, though. That would probably be way too much money. Anyway, moving on. Apparently, there is a YouTuber that has gotten a 5090 or has a 5090, and he decided to test it in Cyberpunk 2077. So he decided to try 4K resolution at ultra settings, pushing the DLSS as far as it can go, because he wanted, obviously, to get above 60 if he can. And he wanted to try to see if he can maintain 100-plus FPS in 4K all the time. He claims that the 5090 performed quite well with 4X frame generation and DLSS set to performance mode. He said that the 50 runs Cyberpunk 2077 at 4K Ultra Max Ray Tracing at 290 FPS.
Max Ray Tracing even. Yep. Ray Tracing.
290. 290. I'm like, whoa, that, I don't know. And the frame rate is coupled with 35 to 40 plus milliseconds of latency. Turning
like
on the DLSS to quality instead of performance drops the FSS down from 290 to 200. That's still great. And introduces a small spike in latency along with it, though. Changing the frame settings from 2x to 4x and vice versa does not seem to have much of an effect on latency. And what they're, this is something we've been hearing. They were saying, like, every time you step up from, you know, the frame generation, multi-frame generation, the latency is going to increase. But apparently it doesn't. It stays right around where it was from the beginning. So that's a good sign, I guess. So the 5090 was hitting 200 frames with DLSS quality and 4x frame generation. And he said the GPU is only managing around 65 FPS with frame generation off. So that's not bad with frame generation off, 65, you know, but with it on, it's hitting 200 easy. So that's kind of neat. So if, we have things to look forward to, maybe.
If this is accurate, then this guy has broken his embargo pretty severely, because the benchmarking embargo is, I don't know what day it is, it's any day now. They're only allowed to unbox it at the moment. They're not allowed to release benchmarks or anything. So
I don't understand, because this is the second one now I've seen. So I'm tending to believe that one way or the other, somehow they got a hold of it. And like you said, they broke
it. No. They've had it for days, mate. Maybe a week or two.
Yeah.
Because they need time to do all this testing. It's just they're told the embargo is this date to not release X, Y, and Z before this date. Otherwise, we'll never give you another card again. So they've had the card for a while, but they've just leaked stuff.
So what they do is this guy apparently has done it. This other one other person apparently has done it, and they plan on changing their name in court for the next time so that they can get,
one. They're at it. I take it with a pinch of salt anyway, but I mean, it makes sense. It's a beast of a card. It's too rich for me in every aspect. It's just too. It's 25% uplift over the 4090. 30% uplift for 25% more. Because it's a lot more expensive than the 4090, whereas the 5080, I don't know the percentages, but it isn't. It's less than 25% over the 4080. I know that much. It's better bang for your buck, basically.
It should take the frames per second and equate it to how much money it is.
So probably someone has, yeah.
Right, yeah. It's like, this is how much money you're blowing every time.
Yeah, scary, isn't it, really?
Yeah. The next article I had, I thought was kind of interesting. I wanted to see, especially your opinion, Trev, what you think of what this particular person wrote in the article. And basically, it stated that 6 overlooked settings in NVIDIA control panel, the control panel, not the drivers and things. People forget there is an NVIDIA control panel for better gaming performance. So they list down the things that you should try to do. And I wanted to see whether some of this made sense or not. Obviously some of them are quite, you know, like no duh, under choose resolution, you know, create a custom resolution, accept the warning message that opens. Okay. You can now set a custom resolution, refresh rate, and other advanced settings. If you know what you're doing, remember to click apply if you're making any changes in this section. I find that a little risky. You better know what you're doing before you start changing some of that stuff. Cause it's going to make things kind of hard to see. I've never really messed with those on the level that they're talking about. I don't think you really need to. I just don't know whether that's something that I would necessarily advise somebody to do. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I just let it do its thing. You don't need to be dicking about. Well, you get tiny marginal gains. It's got GPU boost 3.0 or higher on it now anyway. You just let it do its thing and it'll boost itself automatically. If you try dicking about and tweaking it, you'll get minimal performance back.
Yeah.
So not worth I haven't bothered it. Trying to manually overclock GPUs for a while now.
They even put in here warning, overclocking your refresh rate isn't recommended by NVIDIA. No kidding.
No, not so much.
They also warn, don't push your monitor too close and too much or you'll risk damaging it permanently. Yeah, sure.
Definitely you can overclock your monitor, yeah, but it's...
not worth it. I don't want to blow my monitor out.
No, some of them have it built in. Like, so you'll run a native, I think mine's is 120, but it's got overclocked to 144.
Yeah.
And it's designed for it, but its native is not 144, it's 120, so...
I think that's all a marketing gimmick. Like, hey, you can boost it to 144. And like, I would have bought a 144 then.
Yeah, that's true.
The next one is like a no-brainer, duh, moment. Set up G-Sync. Really? Or FreeSync?
Is it not automatic that?
Huh?
This is via the app, right? So you can, right, I get this. So if you enable these things, it will automatically kick in for every game you play. Mm. But G-Sync, I think, was something that I thought was already turned on by default. If you have a G-Sync monitor,
right,
you need to have a G-Sync monitor, right, which I have, but not everyone has. A lot of the time it's AMD FreeSync.
Right, because FreeSync goes with any card, and it always has.
And then there's FreeSync Pro, which is the premium edition, but I think it's free as well, is it not? So no license required.
They said it's recommended to select and enable it for windowed and full screen mode. I think people sometimes forget to do that. But that's pretty much a no-brainer. That's been out for a while. Everybody knows it. It definitely helps. Mm-hmm. Here's one I hadn't really heard of before. Power management mode. It says the power management mode setting allows you to dial your desired power profile for your NVIDIA GPU. Most people should leave this at the default setting, so why are you talking about it? But if you're experiencing weird issues in games, especially when pausing or unpausing, like in alt tabs, then you should give this one a quick look. And it says manage 3D settings under 3D settings, section on the left, scroll down, click power management mode. Look at the options. You might see normal, adaptive, optimal, and prefer maximum performance, or a combination of those options on the dropdown. And then, choose one of them. He says he leaves his on normal, of course.
No, I leave mine on maximum always.
Yeah. So these are a few things that, people I don't think about that you might want to play around with. I wouldn't do the Hertz thing and overclock it, but some of these make sense. Low latency mode. Keep it snappy, he says. Not to be confused with NVIDIA Reflex. The low latency mode setting can be used to prioritize lower latency over maximum performance by limiting the number of frames the CPU has in the render queue. Mm-hmm. By default, this setting is set to off. I didn't know that, which means games are allowed to fill the render queue with additional frames before the GPU is ready to receive them. So apparently you can go into manage 3D settings again, and under 3D settings section on the left, you can scroll down and click low latency mode to bring up the options. You can choose on or ultra to minimize latency depending on how aggressive you want to be. Interesting.
Fair enough.
Max frame rate. They said again, you would go into the manage 3D settings, and there's again on the left, you scroll down and there is a max frame rate. Click and drop down and select the maximum frame rate you want to set. I don't know if setting a maximum is always...
I really don't get the point in that. Especially if you have a G-Sync monitor. Mm-hmm. It's designed to sync to your monitor. And if you're running way past what your monitor can handle, then...
He's claiming that it's useful with games that exceed your monitor's refresh rate,
which can be quite a few of them. But I mean,
yeah, and he was mentioning Valorant, Counter-Strike.
The reason it's an issue, Gray, is because it can cause a little bit of, like, think of VSync.
Mm-hmm.
It can cause a little bit of issue with sync and a little bit of stuttering. Mm-hmm. But usually you have AMD FreeSync or G-Sync on a monitor so that it kind of minimizes that, if not eliminates it. So I don't see the bloody point in that, especially in high-frame monitors, yeah, which most of us have these days.
The last thing he mentions is monitor technology, use the full power of FreeSync, G-Sync. And again, he tells you to go into the same thing again, manage 3D settings, and then scroll down and click monitor technology. And then on the drop-down menu, select G-Sync or G-Sync compatible. These are the ideal choices for the setting. So why would, if it's automatic, why would you need to do that, though?
This is why I have issues a little bit with what this guy's saying in the article. It seems as if it's almost like a guide for dummies. And that's not an insult to people. It's like some people might not know what they're doing, which is fine. But if you get into that level of hardware, you kind of expected that you know at least a little bit of what you're doing anyway. And a lot of the defaults are more than fine, I usually find. But yeah.
He seems to think, though, that the most important ones are to play with, I guess, is the low latency mode and the power management mode.
Yeah, probably. I mean, the thing is, having it on high all the time, Gray, would use more juice.
Sure.
Would use more power, which I'm not caring about that, but yeah, agreed.
Sorry, I had a sneeze. I heard you, though.
Bless you.
Last thing I thought, I didn't even think about this at the time, but the article just came out saying that EA's Origin, you remember Origin?
I heard about that today as well. Yep. Yep.
Right. And apparently it's going to fully shut down April 17th of this year. So I haven't really played much on the Origins app in a long time, but I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't even know if I installed it on my, when I rebuilt my computer. So when they mentioned that, I was going like, oh yeah, that's right.
Yep.
So, I don't know if people really care that much, but it's just that it's something that's been around for a long time, and now it's just dying out. So, later that.
But they're I don't know if you're going to cover it, but it's for a while now the replacement app is just called the EA app, and I've had it on my machine for a year or two now because it's been in beta for quite a while, and it is better. I must admit, it is better.
Yeah, but that was integrated into, was it?
What is now? Or? It is, well, it, or? They don't. Microsoft don't own them.
It's, no, no, I know. Activision
they own. But no, it is. It can be linked. You need to link them if you want to play certain free Xbox Game Pass games.
Okay.
But I've not had it installed for a while either, mate, because I don't really play EA games much, really, if at all. If I really wanted to play one via the Xbox Game Pass, I'll install it again. But
they're very sports heavy, so which I don't really like to play sports that much on my PC games anyway. Not saying they're not great and not fun. It's just I just don't, you know.
They don't just do sports games, but yeah, they mainly do sports games. That's the thing. So, and I don't really play sports games. So, yeah, fair enough. It's entirely up to you, Gray, but we do have time for your AI corner, or you can leave it. It's entirely up to you.
Yeah, I was going to leave that off because I need to. I'm doing a little research on some of what they wrote.
Right. Okay. Cool.
It'd be better to.
Well,
obviously not doing the gaming quiz with only two of us.
No, it's not. It's a little bit shorter than normal because it's just two of us, but still an hour and a half. We'll be heading off in a moment to sack both Tarl and Matt, especially Matt for the podcast, because he's in a gaming room playing games with his friends now.
I know, and I already see some of the messages back and forth. I'm like,
I'm getting the sack ban hammer out for a lot of them, sacking everyone and everything. We will be playing some games in a little bit, I believe. So,
yep, some zombies in a little bit.
We'll make it short and sweet. We'll sign off there. We'll be back hopefully. Oh, actually, no, another pre-recording next week, I believe.
Yep.
Unless you three want to do it live, we'll discuss it later. We'll see.
And
two
if
football
you want
matches
it live,
in a row.
You,
how rude!
If you want it live instead of pre-recorded the next week, then you have to go to the football game that Trev's going to be at, and we'll broadcast from there.
No, the bandwidth is impossible there, man. Everyone's using the same mobile mast, the same cell tower. Okay, you can't use nothing.
You see us sitting there trying to do a podcast in the stands and a ball comes flying at us.
50,000 people trying to use the one mast. It's impossible. but yeah, we'll wrap up there. We'll see you next time. Until then, say goodbye to people, Mr. Gray.
Goodbye, everybody. See you next week.
See you later. Bye-bye. Bye.
I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart. In my heart I have but one desire, and that one is you.